Welcome to Temple of Elves Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have as my guest Sayward Ayer, who is the author of Aliens at My Fingertips, Real Meetings with Strange Beings. Sayer has interests in many things, including archaeology, anthropology, naturopathy, and she has written a very interesting book on her personal experiences and linking it to literature throughout time on the aliens and are they walking among us. Welcome, Sayward. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Good to be here.
I'm having a little bit of trouble with my Kindle. Let me see if I can get to your bio, but I may not be able to. So would you like to, let's see, maybe I can here. Let's see. So you have a naturopathy degree from the College of Natural Health,
right.
And you have a Bachelor's of Arts degree in Anthropology and Archaeology. Would
yes.
you like to tell the listening audience a little bit about how you came to understand aliens may actually have been here for a while and may actually be, according to some of the records, some of the ancient records may actually have created the human race.
Yeah, it's a big story.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah, and I don't think it'll be easily told in an hour, but I can just briefly let you know where I started becoming interested in this. I could say I was pretty young. I was about 18, I believe, when I started reading books such as Eric von Däniken, Temple of the
mm-hmm.
God, all those. And then I started reading Edgar Cayce books and understanding what he was able to do
mm-hmm.
with his consciousness. And then I was reading some of the other, there's so many good ones back then. One of them is escaping my name, but he wrote he wrote Worlds in Collision, Earth in Upheaval, and those books, and he heavily researched them. This is not Eric von Däniken. This is
mm-hmm.
another author that I'll think of in a minute. his works are still being proven true,
mm-hmm.
and he was way ahead of his time. And so with all of that, and then, of course, it was Eric von Däniken who first was really making the noise about these subterranean tunnels down in South America
mm-hmm.
and all that. So so then I got into archaeology later on. Oh, by that time, though, also in my early 20s, I was having some very extraordinary out-of-body experiences in my lucid dream that were
mm-hmm.
too real to be dismissed as just a dream. And
right.
Yeah, so that, and I've written about those in my lucid dream book, the second book of the True Encounters series, which is
mm-hmm.
the Brilliant Beyond, Do Lucid Dreams Prove Eternal Life? So as time went on, and of course you get caught up with life and you work and you have to make money and buy your cars and
mm-hmm.
date your boyfriend and life happens, you know. And then
right.
and then I was taking anthropology, and some of the things that we were studying in anthropology, and then I got into archaeology, just didn't fit with what
mm-hmm.
they were. The pattern just wasn't fitting. And then I went
right.
down to actually work in some archaeology and saw some very interesting things. And then after that, I actually went to some other archaeological sites that had already been
mm-hmm.
excavated, such as the ones down in Mexico, or recently I went down and did Peru, and even more recently than that, I was in Turkey looking at a lot
mm-hmm.
of different archaeological sites. And when you've had a little bit of a background in archaeology and you take a look at the way that these have been constructed and their subterranean features as well as their above-ground features and all, and the way that the rock has been, the stone has been worked, and where it came from, and the finish on it, and the size of it, and all of these types of things, you come away with this knowledge, this understanding inside yourself that we don't have this technology now. Whatever
right.
they had back then. Yeah,
that's
whatever
right.
they had back
that's
then.
That's very true.
It's not now. And if we do have it now, it's being kept very dark. Very
right.
black off.
Yeah.
And that's a possibility, too. But anyway, so after all of those things, and then I started having my own little experiences as recorded in this book, Aliens at My Fingertips, I came away. I couldn't help, after having these experiences, it's one thing to hear other people's experiences and you are left with question marks hanging in your head and you go, well, I wonder, maybe they imagined that or, you know, or maybe it was real, but you just don't know because you weren't there. But
yeah,
I
wanted to talk about the different kinds of experiences, too. You have three different kinds of experiences in your book, which are all very enlightening. And I had two different experiences that I want to share, but I want you to tell yours first. But between my experiences and your experiences, we've got the range of what's possible.
Oh, very interesting. I'm glad you want to talk about yours, because I was going to ask you, I thought you must have had something in order for you to be interested in
it.
Well, I'll briefly tell you.
I wanted to tell you, on Temple of Health Radio Show, I've been doing this show weekly for about 17 years, and I've interviewed many, many people, you know, who have contributed to this line of work. Paul von Voorde, you know, the author of Forbidden Archaeology, a couple of other scientific types that compiled all of the known evidence that you were talking about, that we have off-world technology. So, you know, I've got a real good background on this, and then also, you know, we've had a group meeting every week since 1990 with a fairly significant spiritual hierarchy and a galactic communication. So, you know, we've been doing this a while. And
wow.
But anyway, but go ahead. Let's talk about your three encounters, because they're very telling about what people have to understand is that there are very different types of aliens. There's very low energy aliens and very, very high energy aliens, and or what we would call extraterrestrials. And that not all are the same, and not all intents are the same. So discernment becomes very, very important when you start interacting.
Right, right. Yeah, briefly, I'll just tell the three, but boy, I'd sure like to learn more later about that group of yours that you do, because I'd be interested in that. Okay.
Sure.
Well, the first incident I had was... Some people might say, oh, this was just a dream, but I feel that I was totally awake. I woke up in the middle of the night. This was back in, I can't remember the year offhand, but it's in the book, the early 90s, 94, I think it was. And I knew something was down at my bed. You know when something's nearby you, you can sense that energy. I woke up frozen in place, in bed, terrified. And I couldn't even turn my head to look down and see what was there. I don't know whether it was the shock of the whole thing or not, what happened, but I suddenly was viewing what was at the bottom of the bed from above my body. So I was having like an out-of-body vision suddenly, probably due to sheer... no other way to look at it, and it just shocked me into looking at it that way, so where that my consciousness just went up and was viewing it from above, and what I saw was two small, kind of dark blue-gray, cone-headed aliens, tall cone-headed. They only stood about 3 feet tall. They had, you know, leathery kind of skin. They weren't wearing anything, and they didn't appear to have any gender. And they were both down there as though they were waiting for my approval to go with them or something. I wasn't really sure what they were there for, but that's all I could think of at the time. And so that was that one instance. And then I bid them to leave mentally.
Right.
And they did, thank goodness.
Yeah.
So I go into that whole thing. And then after that chapter, I give an awful lot. Well, you know, all three chapters have a bit of research after it with a lot of links. The second one was the aliens at the ARCO station. I have to say that of all of them, that one I am absolutely certain they were not human. There's no way they could have been human. So that was quite an experience. They looked human. One was, they were dressed in human clothes. They looked human. One was very tall and blonde. I guess he was around 7 feet tall. He had not very much hair. It was kind of a sheer cut. And the other one was not too much taller than I am, which is about, you know, he was probably about 5'6" or so, something like that. And they were dressed to the nines. And it was at the ARCO station. There was this whole incident that played out in front of my eyes with them that ended up making me realize suddenly my whole body as I was watching them just went completely covered with goosebumps and the shiver went through me and the instantaneous knowledge that these are not human beings. These aren't from here. You know, I just instantly knew it. And the third one was when I was up, I used to spend my winters down in Palm Springs, and I would hike up to the top of the tram road that goes up to the Palm Springs Aerial Tramway. And that one was with this incident with a couple of people that turned out to be the snakiest people I have ever met. The conversation with them did not last more than, you know, time gets weird when you're in one of those zones, so it's hard to say. I'm sure it didn't last 5 minutes, but I think probably it only lasted a total of 2 minutes before I cleared the deck and got out of there because the situation just seemed so ominous and so dangerous, and I was the only one out there on the deck with these folks and all the rest of the wilderness behind us. So in that case, I felt that those two were reptilians, and that's what I looked into as far as the research that went after that.
The experts who compile this data tell us that there are probably at least 70 different types of aliens that regularly visit the Earth, which is
that would not surprise.
So that there's going to be a number of different types of aliens. Most of us are real aware of the smaller, stranger looking ET type aliens. Yours had cone heads, which is one type, but they tend to be quite different than us. And then the reptilians are well known. The TV series V, which by the way stands for Verdant, is a group of aliens that probably control the Greys. So the reptilians are well known as well, and they're probably the Greys are more like the little cone heads you had at the foot of your bed, and they're more like the worker bees, but the Verdants are more intelligent and more, they're the ones actually working with our government. So that's how that plays out. Now, many of these aliens come from the fourth dimension, and you know that because their ships just disappear into nothingness. And David Wilcox has a really good explanation for that. I actually met David when we both were presenting at the Truth Convention here in Atlanta, and I attended his 8-hour lecture on this, which just blew my mind. But essentially, the space-time is what is in the fourth dimension, space-time is in the third dimension, time-space is in the fourth dimension, and he explained the difference between those. And when they go from the third to the fourth, they just simply blink out because they're shifting dimensions. So these little beings can appear in your bedroom. They have technology to freeze you, like what happened. You were laying face down, but you have the ability to leave your body and viewpoint, view it from a higher viewpoint, which is, you know, typical of many of us who have spiritual gifts. So, and you also communicated to them via telethought communication, which is also something that is common. In other words, you beamed your thoughts into their head and they understood you. And
right.
So we can communicate with aliens through telethought communication. I'm not sure that 100% of humans know how to do this, but certainly many of us who are interacting know how to do this. So those are some of the history that I know. Now, my experiences were with aliens, we don't really call them aliens, we call them extraterrestrials, who are from the fifth and sixth dimensions. So this is a little bit different. These are not the ones working with our government. These are the ones that will be working with us after the ascension. And they provide a great deal of information about what's going to happen. Around 2000, I got a phone call from a college student who had heard about me, and he requested to come for an activation. It's just a kind of a specialized healing that I do that helps elevate people's vibrational rates so that they can become better healers, more clairvoyant, whatever they want to do. I mean, it's just, you know, at a higher vibrational rate, you can do lots more of the spiritual things.
Right.
So I had him come after hours. I hadn't met him before, but when he walked in, I also sensed that he was very different. He had this bright aura around him, just a really wonderful, loving person. He was probably about 20. He was attending one of the colleges here in town, and he was a communications major. And we chatted for a little bit. He said that he had this thing about being on TV, and they always put him on TV. He was always the spokesperson, you know, whenever they were doing their exercises, because he was so wonderful on TV. And I could see why, you know, he would be able to project that energy just
right.
Great. So we started our activation, and I sensed something in the room, and I looked up, and there were six Syrians in the room beamed in.
Wow.
Okay, Syrians are very tall. They're higher dimensional beings that are, I guess, the control the technology for most of the higher dimensional extraterrestrials. They're the technological experts from Sirius, of course, the Dog Star. And I kind of through telethought communication, I said, "What are you guys doing here?" Now I didn't have any fear. You know, this is the first time I'd ever seen anything like that. Okay, but I didn't have any fear because they were very, very high beings like angels or, you know, they were more, nothing scary, not like your conehead people.
Right.
And they said through telethought communication back to me, this is one of three Syrian ambassadors. We are here to help you with the activation. And the next time you see him, he'll be addressing the UN. Well, I thought that was interesting. So we did the activation. They helped. They went out. You know, they just disappeared. And then he thanked me and left. And we have a mall here called Phipps Plaza, which is the Ritzy Mall down in Buckhead. And he was going down the escalator the next day in Phipps Plaza, and he had a sudden, and I mean sudden, shift in reality, I mean consciousness. So all of a sudden he woke up, and he was kind of shooken up by this, so he calls me. He says, I just need to come talk to you. He says, this is just too weird. So I said, sure. He came by, and he knew everything. I mean, I didn't tell him anything. He knew it, that he was one of three Syrian ambassadors. He knew about how he got the job. He was telling me all this stuff. His father was on the council, and he said, I can't do this. I don't know how. I said, yes, you can. You're being trained in communications. You can do this, you know. But we just sort of calmed him down, and I told him what I knew from what I had experienced before in session, and, you know, just the general plan of the ascension and everything. So The next day he called me. He said he was leaving Atlanta, going to Arizona, because he'd been guided to go to Arizona. And I said, well, Arizona is where a lot of things are happening with extraterrestrials. So,
right.
You know, Sedona and all that stuff. I said, so
right.
Best of luck. And I have not yet seen him addressing the UN, but I will recognize it if he does and when he does,
wow.
Which I do believe he
yeah.
will. So the Syrians have ambassadors here. They are born into human bodies and then sometimes are activated, I guess. I mean, he was, which means energy is added so that they can then be at a higher level of consciousness to complete their mission. That's what I understand from that. Now,
right.
The last one occurred about a year ago. This was funny because this was, you know, I can't, yeah, the Syrian thing, they weren't in three-dimensional bodies, you know, like what you have to understand is I have spiritual sight. So I could see them, but the Syrians weren't here like you and I are here, okay?
Right.
But mm-hmm. But the next incidents, I did see them in three-dimensional bodies, and it was just hilarious. I was supposed to give a talk. I'm a plastic surgeon. I was supposed to give a talk
yeah.
on labiaplasty, of all things, you know, female external genital surgery in Florida. So I was going down there with a friend who's in my meditation group. He just wanted to take a vacation, and I had to give this lecture. So, but I knew that he wanted to go in the hot tub. And I was looking for my bathing suit before I went down, but I couldn't find it. I mean, I have four or five bathing suits, but everywhere I looked, I couldn't find them. And I was a little annoyed, but I knew that there was a reason for it. You know, it was like in my mind, it says, you're going to have to go out and buy a bathing suit when you get down there. So, which is stupid because I have all these bathing suits, right? Which, by the way, I found them since I got back. They were where I'd looked, but they weren't there, okay? But anyway.
I've had that happen, yeah, where things disappear.
Yeah.
And then you look
you know what I mean,
times,
huh?
And then they come
yeah.
back.
Yeah.
Yeah,
then
yeah.
they come back,
exactly.
right.
Yeah.
Well, there was a reason for this. Okay, so sure enough, I give my lecture. We have a couple of days. He wants to go in the hot tub. This is in Orlando, Florida, right? So anyway, so we go out because I got to buy a bathing suit. So I go to Marshall's because I figure we'll get a good deal there, right? And he's waiting for me while I'm trying on bathing suits. And this couple, who are very tall, very Nordic looking, keep walking by him.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know, they keep,
okay.
no matter where he is in the store, they're right by him. And Steve is very, very intuitive. In fact, he's just one of the best channelers that we have in our group. So we get in line. I find a bathing suit. We get in line, and they're behind us. And they're talking. They're talking in this language that I've never heard. I mean, it's like, and we both look at them, and finally Steve says, what language are you speaking? And they say, we're from Denmark. And they're not from Denmark, because I know Danish. I mean, both Steve and I have heard Danish. It wasn't Danish. And then, so we don't think anything more about it, but we come back to Atlanta, and we're in the next meditation group we're in. This guy he's a physicist. He's one of the people in our group who knows nothing about what happened. Nothing. We didn't tell him anything. He channels that we have met two Palladians in a store in Florida.
Oh, that's good. Oh, my
isn't that
God.
Great?
That's
so we didn't really talk. I mean, we talked to him just a little bit, you know, just a few words. But I swear to God, I think it's true because of the language they were speaking. This was not any language that I'd ever heard.
Yeah.
And they were Nordic. They were tall. They were blonde. You know, just typical Palladian.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
so
amazing.
Anyway.
You know, in my book, I give the quote that the Russian prime minister mentioned back in 2012, I think it was, about how they don't tell anybody what's really going on because it was how many.
No,
they don't tell
no,
anybody
they don't.
How many aliens are actually here on the planet because
there's plenty of them. There's plenty of them. And the thing is, you know, we had been communicating with the Palladians for years and the Syrians for years in session. I mean, every week almost hearing from them. So it's not that they don't know us. They know us very well. And I think it's just very interesting because we were also told that we would meet them in person in session. I mean, we were warned that they would seek us out in public.
Yes.
You know, not that they would come to my door, but they would we would meet them. Now, I had no idea that they were going to do it like that, but you know,
in the
creating the need where I needed to go into a store, and then they—I mean, it's always in a public place, you know.
Right.
And nothing at all scary about the Palladians, by the way. Very, very high beings. Very.
Yeah.
Loving, very, you know, I mean, nothing scary.
Yeah.
I mean, I would have dinner with them, no problem, okay?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
But they were in the physical. They were in the physical, and I guess they can come in and be in the physical. I don't exactly understand how that is.
But many people have
said that the Nordic, that they do encounter the Nordic extraterrestrials in the physical. So evidently they're able to do that.
Right. Billy Meyer encountered them in the physical, I believe.
Right,
They look Nordic, the tall blonde, I think that we're
Simjazi, by the way, is still very active in the delegation.
Oh.
Yeah.
Good.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've been being prepped for this for a long time. You know,
well, the spiritual groups have been communicating with them all over the world, groups like mine. I mean, I know this because they put
the
transcripts up on the board, on the internet.
Right. But I mean, even with the movies that are coming out of Hollywood, like the Men in Black
and
those types of things, I think they're trying to let us know, even Star Wars, the Star Wars movies, you know, and Star Trek and all of that. I think that we've been being told about this for a long time, but we live in our little level of reality down here where we drive our cars and look at TV and look in the smartphone and go to the stores and go shopping. And so we're in this one level, most of us, you know, in this one level of reality almost all the time and fail to see all the other realities that are around us. I mean, that can even go just... When I took up scuba diving a long time ago, I could not believe that under that water out there in the ocean is another whole universe on this planet. I mean, you cannot believe what's in the ocean and all the different life forms and the plants and the animals and the crawly things and the everything. I mean, it's amazing when you do scuba diving, all the stuff you see, and you go, this is foreign. It's like being on a different world completely. And that's right here on this planet. And if people don't go down and look at it, they wouldn't even know it's there.
Well, not only that, but there's multiple worlds just a dimension away. You know, we have multiple dimensions, and we live in a multidimensional universe. There is something I want to tell you about that you may want to go look on YouTube. Very interesting.
Okay.
One of my friends, who I've known for many years, is actually on a member of Majestic. And we were asking her when they're going to do disclosure, because, of course, you know, I've interviewed Stephen Greer and I've interviewed Stan Friedman and many, many other people who are talking about disclosure. And her answer shocked me, This is her answer. It's it's already been done. The head of Majestic put a YouTube video on. He's a microbiologist. He put a YouTube video up on YouTube disclosing that he and other people have been working with extraterrestrials for years, including all the details. But when I went to look at it, it only had like less than 20,000 views.
And but did the actual video say exactly that?
Yep.
It did.
As far as Majestic goes, they have already done disclosure. Now, I can tell you why they did it that way. There is evidently a directive that the extraterrestrials have to follow. They cannot shock people of Earth into some form of emotional discord. Okay, which evidently would happen if it, you know, was on CBS or NBC. So they can disclose, but they have to do it in a way where you have to go out and look for it. because you're interested. You see? So the head of Majestic, and you can find out his name. I don't want to say it online because I might get it wrong, but it's a microbiologist. He actually did a life form, like how planets are seeded, that kind of science. There was a Las Vegas meeting last year that he was very involved in. So, and in fact, my friend said he's actually moved on. Disclosure's old news. They've actually moved on to figuring out how they seed planets with life, kind of like Star Trek, you know. But evidently that's true. The frequency, you know, there's a frequency that seeds planets. And even if, but that's a whole other thing. But in general, you can go watch the Disclosure YouTubes from Majestic.
I will do that. Thank you.
And so people like yourself and people like me who are really interested in what's coming up, which is the ascension. I mean, that's really what this is all about, is what will life be like when the higher level extraterrestrials interact with us. You know, it isn't important for us to interact with the lower level because they're more service to self. We need to be interacting with the service to other. You know, the higher level Palladian, Syrians, Arcturians that can help us solve some of the current serious problems we have, like Fukushima and pollution, global warming, you know, all of the big ones that threaten the planet.
Exactly. The atmosphere and the ocean, boy, we lose those.
Right.
Toast.
Yeah.
Earth will go on, and in 10,000 years or a million years, she'd recover, you know, but humans might not be around at that point, and a lot of other species.
That's true.
Yeah. So,
Let's talk a little bit about the information that Zachariah Sitchin brought in, and it's been confirmed by a number of other authors and researchers that the human race, like especially the Homo erectus, may have been genetically modified into Homo sapien by extraterrestrials. You want to tell that story a little bit?
Well, yeah, without looking at all the details right in front of me, I'll just, apparently, you know, there had been, Homo erectus had been on planet Earth and living very simply and probably pretty much in symbiotic status with the Earth, and apparently extraterrestrials from Nibiru, this planet that's on a 3,600-year cyclical swing around our sun, gets close enough that they could offload, some of them could offload on with their ships or whatever and come to planet Earth and mine gold. And they mined gold. Their own planet, apparently, Nibiru, was having atmospheric conditional problems just like ours is now. And they needed something to protect their planet's atmosphere. We're currently apparently putting up aluminum and barium and strontium and chemtrails all around to try and correct our atmosphere. But at that time, they felt that they needed gold in their atmosphere, so they were mining gold in Africa. And they had levels of their own group, the Anunnaki, supposedly. I mean, they had different terminologies for their different levels of hierarchies, but the Anunnaki were the ones who were digging the gold, apparently, and they, after many years, decades, centuries, whatever, digging the gold, they complained and put up a resistance, much like miners today would. And so the creative people that they had on board with them in their ships and all were given the command to create a new species. And they went ahead and did it using Homo erectus, which was here already, and turned us into worker bees and created Homo sapiens. And then we became the miners, and I say we, meaning Homo sapiens, but became the miners then for them. And ever since then, we've been pretty much worker bee species. And
we've been worshiping gold, too.
That's right.
That's where we learned to worship gold. And they needed the gold because Nibiru is actually in an orbit around another twin to Sun, but it's a dark twin called Nemesis. And so they are at a 30-degree angle to all of the other planets, but when they come around the Sun, they need gold in their atmosphere because they come very close to the Sun, and it can burn them up. And Nibiru is three times the size of Jupiter, so it's gigantic. I mean, it's a very, very big planet. And basically, right now, the Galactic Federation has said that we cannot interact with Nibiruians. Or Nibirunians cannot interact with us, even though they're coming around again. You know, Nibiru is now approaching Earth again. So, but we can't interact with them.
Do you know the timeline on that?
Well, the information we're given is between 2016 2017. That's when they're predicting the pole shift, and I would imagine that the pole shift is because of Nibiru. It usually is.
Right,
at least that seems to be what it's from. The pole shift and the ascension are supposed to coincide. However, they are not related, which is interesting. That's the information we got. But that there will be a global coastal event with the pole shift. And, this is just what we've heard. I have no independent verification of it. I would think, though, that scientists would be able to tell, because Nibiru has been visible, especially in the southern hemisphere, for a few years, even to the naked eye. One of my friends who was in Panama saw it early in the morning right next to the Sun. And there's multiple YouTube videos of Nibiru from the southern hemisphere. Now, your book says that it's going to be visible around 2016 to the naked eye, so that might, I mean, you know, the information I'm getting and the information in your book are, like, right on as far as the timeline, because we're going to see it before it, we're going to see it before it causes the tsunamis, earthquakes, and all the other havoc it's supposed to wreak.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, that's going
to
be.
It's supposed to be scary because it's pretty big, you know. But it's not going to hit the Earth.
Right.
It's just going to. You just don't be. Try to be 300 feet from any ocean, you know, if you can. But anyway, who knows? Yeah, there was information on the alternative media that the military has briefed families to be ready to leave in and stay away for about 2 weeks, ready to leave in a minute's notice and stay away for about 2 weeks. That would indicate
coastal areas?
Yeah, coastal areas only.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Ah, interesting.
And I was in the military, and I was in the military 13 years, and I would think that the military would want to protect the dependents, because the people in the military, if they had not protected the dependents, would be very pissy. And may not follow orders. So I would think, you know, if they really felt that their superiors knew about this but let their children and wives drowned or husbands drowned, there's a lot of women in the military now, that they might be a little pissy about following orders. And, of course, they do feel that there will be martial law after this, or will have to be, because of disruption.
Right.
I do agree that there will be disruption. As far as the timing, I would say that the event that the Zetas say happened right before the pole shift is the New Madrid Fault. So if you ever hear of the New Madrid Fault going off, which, of course, is up the Mississippi, then the pole shift is not too far behind, you know.
Right. Okay. And that's
so
I
would say that would be
too, isn't it?
Yeah. I'd say that would be your warning, you know, your warning.
Right.
But I don't know how far. I mean, I don't know if it's like days, hours, or weeks, you know, whatever.
Right.
But Nibiru, because of its great electromagnetic force, does challenge Earth's electromagnetic field and bend it, and then, of course, thereby increasing volcanic and earthquake activity because
right.
of the magnetic. Yes,
that's already been it's already been happening. So,
right.
So we can expect probably to see more of that.
Yeah, and I know people who advise the government, and when they can't say anything about it because they're under oath, you know, or under top secret clearance. But when I ask them, do they have their AR backed off up on SSD drives? Because of course, all magnetic data will get wiped out during a pole shift. They say, oh yeah, there's a pole shift sometime. Very cryptic. So, you know, if people are backing up, people in the know are backing up their data on SSD drives, like my company is, then they know something's happening.
What
I mean, think
SSD
about the disarray
drives?
When all of your bank accounts and stocks and everything are electronic only, and all of that's wiped out.
Yeah. Well, that's when your basic knowledge of nature comes in handy, and I would encourage everybody to get out, do some camping, learn your plants, learn how to make fire. I mean, it sounds like, oh my God, this is disastrous, but actually it's very fun. It's very fun. It gets you out in the wilderness. You can start in my third book. I actually have a story where I heard the forest talk to me. I was in a section of forest with my dog, and I literally heard the forest talk to me in my head. When you start to get more out into nature and spend time in the wilderness and all, you can be much more sensitive and open to it, and it's wonderful when you learn how to work with it, and you're listening to it, and it's guiding you, and it helps save you. And I think in the long run, understanding the wilderness and being close to nature, being reconnected to nature, is what's going to save people. And I can't recommend that highly enough.
Yeah, I agree. I was in the military, and we actually had a manual. You can probably find it online, a survival manual. Very good information in it. You know, how much Clorox to add to any water to make it, you know, safe to drink, that kind of thing. I mean, very, very good information in the survivor manuals that the military has, because of course they, you know, I mean, they need it. You have to train troops in case they're behind enemy lines to survive. So very good information. The other thing I want to mention to you to see if you've got any thoughts on two things. There's a website that the U.S. government has put up called ready.com, which is interesting to me.
I saw
on 285 here, one of my major highways, I saw this thing, you know, those things above the highway. It says September is readiness month. Now, it doesn't say what we're getting ready for. That's what's so funny. Make sure your family is prepared. Now I'm laughing my ass off with this one. I mean, what are they telling us to get prepared for?
Well, they've been doing this for years now. And then I guess
I know
that FEMA?
FEMA bought all those. Yeah, meals ready to eat,
ammunition, All the food, you know, all this.
Say somebody knows something, okay? But they're not telling people because they don't want to collapse the economy, I guess,
exactly,
or the economy
exactly
or the coast.
Right. That's exactly right. Keep the boat steady till she
They're
goes
in a bit of a
off.
Sticky wicket, I would say. But, you know, I mean, I guess all this is so that after the event, when people say to the government, why didn't you tell us? They're going to say, we did. It was on the website.
I know. They've been telling us all along. I know it.
And it's kind of like disclosure. We already did that.
Yeah, they've covered their butt.
They did. I think it's hilarious. But anyway, so I would agree. Take a look at ready.com. I mean, take a look at the survivor stuff. Not that you have to, you know, have 2 years worth of food down in your basement, you know, but you really ought to have certain things covered. Food and water, like a good source of water. Security,
yeah.
Including guns if you live in a city, and with ammunition. And power. I mean, the big thing is power. That's what you need to be concerned about, because especially if it's winter or you're up north, to be without power is a problem. It could be life-threatening within days.
Yeah. Well, if we do go through a pole shift, and if Nibiru is going by and we're having these major electromagnetic storms or whatever, we can expect the grid to go down, and there won't
that's
be
right.
power anywhere except
right.
for the
so ones generators
that are
or
generators,
yeah.
and
yeah.
that won't last long. So that's why I'm saying that people really should get to love the wilderness again. Get out with your backpack, get a tent, learn how to, you know, I've got this wonderful little device that makes fire. It's one of those little magnesium scrapers with a flint. And
yeah.
You scrape that little bit of magnesium off, and then you, what do you do after? I haven't done it in a while.
you have something like paper that's going to burn easily.
Yeah. You get a little pile of leaves and twigs, you know. And,
right,
and then you scrape
yeah.
a little of that magnesium, and then, there's this clicker thing that creates sparks on it. And the sparks make a little fire. You know, it's good to have. Those aren't very expensive. Those are like, you can find those in various outing stores for, I think, $20 or something like that. That's a good backup thing to have. Another thing that I have is ways of purifying water that don't involve carrying a jug of Clorox around. You know, like I have the,
UV sterilization
UV
is very good. Yeah,
but also you can collect water from the atmosphere using like cheesecloth hung up, and if it's overnight, and then there's some of the movies that they've shown about how people have survived, and there's great books also how you can use condensation that you create overnight on a tarp with a rock in the middle holding it down, and then underneath it you have a cup. You know, I mean, that Robert Redford was in a movie recently where he did that on his boat where he was out. Yeah, there's all kinds of ways. And people need to get back to figuring this stuff out and learning it again. I know this sounds, we sound, to somebody out there listening, we probably sound, oh, my God, these girls are just off the wall with fear tactics.
Well, let's put it this way. It's a possible reality. But the one that I think is going to happen instead, I don't think that you and I are going to be out in the woods with our UV things for water and our flints for fire. Remember that I said the ascension coincides with the pole shift?
Right.
Well, if we're going through an ascension, we won't be in a danger zone. When we ascend, we're not going to be ascending into a third-dimensional Earth scenario.
Right.
So
yeah,
if we're going to be ascending...
I don't exactly know what ascension means myself. I mean, does that mean...
Well, it means joining these higher dimensional worlds that we currently can't see with our organs of perception. Because we're at a too dense level.
Just our spirit, our consciousness goes.
Right.
So that means we don't need to.
But we take our bodies with us. We take our bodies with us. Our bodies are no longer, our bodies are no longer physical. They're light bodies. Okay? But we don't die. I mean, we don't end up as a corpse here. But we actually transcend and take our bodies with us as light bodies, but we're no longer in danger. Okay, you don't have to be out in the wilderness surviving. So anyway, that's what we were told. The ascension and the pole shift are coinciding. Not everybody is ascending at the same rate. It's like popcorn. Some will ascend, like a few are ascending now, and then more will pop out, and then a whole bunch will pop right around the pole shift, and then a few will pop after. So you might be out in the wilderness for a little bit before you ascend. But in any case, we're told not to worry about it, okay?
Yeah,
it'll be fine, okay?
Yeah.
It'll actually be a lot of fun. So I tend not to worry about it, because when higher dimensional beings tell me not to worry about it, they've got a different perspective than I do, and it's actually a lot better than my perspective.
Right.
Okay?
But I don't actually worry about, even if the body did die, even if my body did die, I feel certain because of the experiences that I've had that my consciousness goes on. And it looks like
it does.
It looks
like it does.
My body, because I see myself flying around in it and doing other things with it. It's my body. So I don't know if
that's like your light body. Okay.
Okay.
It does not die.
Right.
It's not physical. I mean, you can't, like, if you came into my bedroom at night to talk to me in your light body, I could put my hand through your body, okay?
Exactly. Yes, exactly.
Right. But it's still your body.
Right. So that's what I didn't quite get with ascension, is because it, in my mind then, it seems like the body doesn't have to go, because if just if the body's left behind here, you can ascend just with your consciousness. You know, and it's
we're told that we will not be dying, though. It's not like you leave a corpse behind.
Right.
I don't understand it either exactly. I mean, how could we? We're stuck in the third dimension here. How can we understand higher dimensional stuff? But higher dimensional communication, telethought communication from higher dimensional beings, is telling us a certain thing that it, and remember, I interview all sorts of people who are bringing forth this information, and the information is all lining up. It's all consistent, internally consistent. That's what, you know, I've always said, we can't learn about ascension from anybody who resides in the third dimension.
Right.
Because we can't conceive it. I mean, we really can't. I mean, I don't pretend to, I'm just telling you what I've been told, either in session or more commonly through what I've interviewed channels of higher dimensional beings for years on this radio show about the ascension. I've interviewed people who've written books on the ascension. It's all internally consistent. That's all. What I just told you is what we've been told by higher dimensional beings. Now, we'll find out what happens. I mean, you know, I'm not saying to anybody out there that this is the truth. This is a probable future.
Yeah. Hey, did you read in my book about that part where I wrote about that thing that happened on the television screen over in Europe in 1977 with the voice of Grandma coming on? Well, you know, it's just wonderful what that was. An amazing thing that happened there. And I just wanted to, that was incredible. And I just wanted to read what he says here. He said, he's saying, be aware also that there are many false prophets and guides operating on your world. They will suck your energy from you, the energy you call money, and will put it to evil ends, giving you worthless dross in return. His voice was amazing too when he said this. And then he says, your inner divine self will protect you from this. You must learn to be sensitive to the voice within that can tell you what is truth and what is confusion, chaos, and untruth. Learn to listen to the voice of truth, which is within you, and you will lead yourselves onto the path of evolution. This is our message to you, our dear friends. And he goes on to finish off.
It's a very important message. I mean, it's how you knew not to engage with those reptilian beings in California. It's how we proceed in life, in business dealings, in relationships, and whether or not you buy a stock or sell a stock or even do anything with the stock market, you know, because, good Lord, we're not really sure that that's okay, you know. But the point is, if you live your life with inner guidance, then you're a lot safer. And especially with the things in the next few years that are going to be happening, I don't care who you are on the planet, you probably realize that we're in a time that's different. It's more dangerous. It's more uncertain. The government's got, you know, websites about readiness. I mean, you know, without really telling you what it is,
and
you know.
I mean, the thing is that we cannot make our decisions on fear. We have to make our decisions.
Yeah.
We have to listen to that inner still place, because we have to know. We have to know that this is all an illusion anyway. This is all just one plane of dimension that we're living in right now.
Yeah.
We can't get so attached to this life that everything scares us. You know, we're going to die one way or another, so, and then we go on to another reality. So we can't operate off of fear. We have to operate off of our inner gut, our inner voice that's talking to us, and we have to be calm and peaceful inside when chaos is roiling around us, so that we can hear that voice and ask it a question like, where should I go now? And we have to be still.
That's very true.
What should I take with me? You know, this type
of
thing.
That's very true.
I just want to say for the people out there who are listening, that if they aren't buying my book and don't get the link to it, because the link is in my book to this voice of Gramaha, but they really should hear this. This is amazing. I mean, there's all kinds of information on the internet, but this one is really astounding. And if they go YouTube and just type in voice of Gramaha, G-R-A-M-A-H-A, I think that they'll probably get it. YouTube voice of Gramaha. It'll probably come up, and then go ahead and listen to that for those of you out there who want to hear something very interesting. And that was back in the day before they could, you know, that was back before the internet. Back, none of the towers that had been overtaken, the broadcasting towers, there was no evidence that that had been tampered with or anything. They could not figure out how this message overrode the news broadcast and displayed itself on the screen. It was amazing.
Well, we're coming up at the end of our hour. Would you like to give your contact information?
Sure. My website is my name, saywardair.com, and that's SAYWARDAYRE.com. And the books are also available on Amazon in ebook or print on demand. And so you can either go to Amazon and look up Sayward Air, or you could go to my website, saywardair.com, and get them either way.
Well, Sayward, thanks so much for joining us. I'd like to have you back on for some of your other books if you want to talk some more. I think we had a very interesting conversation, and we're obviously two souls on the same path. So
we can
share
and learn more about what you're doing. I'd very much like that. So,
Well, great. Well, I'll email you after I get off here. I do have your email address. I'm pretty sure. I'm almost positive I do.
Great.
And
thank you.
Thanks so much. Yeah, thanks so much for joining us. It's been a delightful conversation.
Thank you for having me on. Pleasure to meet you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Next week, we're interviewing Greg Braden, The Turning Point, Creating Resilience in a Time of Extremes. Again, my point that we're in a special time. And then on the 11th, Stephanie Sorrell, Depression, Understanding the Black Dog. And we're going to have Tom Palladio back on the 18th talking about scalar energy. This is fifth-dimensional energy that is available to you through some very interesting technologies Tom has come up with, and I highly recommend it if you're having any health challenges. This is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show. Please join us next week.